It's Tuesday, January 19th. We just had an awesome divisional round weekend. Only three football games left, and we'll get you prepared for the next two coming up. Tom Brady beat Drew Brees. Josh Allen, the Bills, rolled over the Ravens, and the Chiefs barely got by the Browns. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Gabe Goodwin. This is Jeff Schwartz of Smarter Than You. Gabe, what a weekend, man. What a weekend of football. How are you?
I'm good. Great weekend of football. I think your background is a little bit upgraded. I feel like you've, in playoff time, you've gone to like playoff level decoration behind your head here.
My wife redid the background, yes.
Great.
It looks good. We added some stuff. We took away all the mirror, like my photos don't have mirrors anymore. Not mirrors, glass, because the glass reflects the lights. You know, professional setup here. Got some lights in this room.
Yep.
And no, we upgraded this a couple weeks ago. We need to do the shelving probably, but that's another time, another place. It does look good. Got my Chiefs picture up top. Obviously, the Chiefs have advanced to the third straight AFC Championship game. First time in history. Three straight AFC Championship games in the same host city. By the way, in the NFC, the only coach to ever do that, Andy Reid with the Eagles as well. So Andy Reid is definitely used to playing in championship games. But I don't think we're starting with that game today, Gabe.
No, we are starting with the take parade in honor of Tom Brady, because of course we are. It's hell for a few of us. And I honestly just can't get over this, Jeff. I'm just going to say it. I don't care what the mentions look like. He is one lucky dude, man. He barely beat an XFL backup on a losing team in wildcard weekend. Then he beat Drew Brees in the Superdome because Drew Brees had the worst game of his career at the most important moment of his life. Four turnovers Tom Brady's defense comes up with for him, including at least a couple that put him right in scoring position. He wins, and now I'm just praying along with everyone else out there who's had to endure this guy for 20 years that maybe some higher power will step in and fix things with an Aaron Rodgers win in the NFC Championship. Please tell me there's something you see in football that suggests Aaron Rodgers will win this game.
Maybe it's just time to accept Tom Brady is the king.
No.
The GOAT. The best of all time. Obviously, Tampa's win yesterday was definitely fueled by the defense. And there's many reasons to think that they're going to struggle this weekend in Green Bay. So don't you worry, Gabe.
Okay.
We'll get to the gambling angle of this on Thursday's podcast, but look, Tampa Bay had 21 points off the four Saints turnovers. They had the three Drew Brees picks and the punch out of Jared Cook. Even going back to the Packers game, when the last time the Bucs had beaten a team with a winning record, they had 14 points off turnovers in that game as well. So 35 points off turnovers in the games where they beat winning teams, which obviously it's hugely important. The other drives, when they didn't have, you know, they didn't have the ball for turnover, they had like four punts, three field goals, and they ended the game with the ball. So not as good. We're not given the shorter field from the defense. So if that's your angle to go with as a Tampa Bay hater, Tom Brady hater, that's one way to go. But look, man, throughout the entire year, through the first 12 weeks of the season, we said, I don't know. You know that Larry David gif? He's like, you know what I mean? Like, they're going to do it. Gabe, they're in the NFC Championship game. I don't care how you get your mind around that. But Tom Brady left New England, where he dominated for 20 years, went to Tampa Bay, came in with a COVID offseason, no offseason whatsoever, brand new piece with a coach that I think that we think is good, but not great. And they're back in the NFC Championship game. I don't care any way you want to slice it, Gabe, lucky, whatever it is, they got them. He got them there. They're there as a team again. Come on, man. Give him his props.
Okay, way to go. He got like all the weapons for 20 years worth of weapons arrive on his doorstep to come ring chase with him. You know, he has a defense that's way better than anyone realizes. Devin Smith's unreal. Just unreal. And it's just,
why don't other quarterbacks have much as luck? Drew Brees has a better team, better roster than does Tom Brady. Why does he have better luck? The Saints have not won two playoff games in the postseason since 2009. They've scored between 20 and 23 points their last five playoff games. So why can't Drew Brees have this look that Tom Brady has?
I've said it. Tom Brady is very good at playing quarterback and all-time great at getting lucky. I'm not saying he isn't good. I have to accept that he is good. He's better at 43 than I ever would have imagined, okay? All I'm saying is it's just weird how things go his way. Like, The punt touchdown that's called back on the stupidest block I've ever, like, that was not a call. Like, they're just little things, you know, that go his way that He's won the rings. He earned them. Good for him. But it's just, can't we just stop giving him lucky breaks? Can't the league just pull their shit together against this guy just once?
I will say, looking ahead to this weekend, they're going to need all those breaks to beat the Packers right now.
Okay.
The Packers are playing at an extremely high level. Look what they did to the Rams. We talked about this heading the weekend. Rams had number one passing defense, number one deep passing defense. I think the Packers had the ball 9 times in that game. They scored on 6 of the possessions, right? Not all touchdowns, but 6 possessions. One possession ended with a dropped touchdown pass that Lazard dropped. One ended with a punt. So those two ended with a punt. The 9th possession ended with the Packers running out the clock. That's just the number one passing defense in the NFL. Now, Aaron Donald, you know, didn't play his best. He was hurt. We get that. That obviously hurt that defense. But the Packers played a methodical game. They ran the football well. They hit the play-action bomb when they had to. Davante Adams played well. I mean, they are dialed in right now. So if Tampa is not ready to play, if they cannot force those turnovers, they don't really stand a chance in this game, in my opinion, because offensively we've seen Tampa kind of needs some things to go their way at times to get the offense rolling. If the Packers are, and the Packers, by the way, take up a lot of time on the clock. They take a lot of time between play. They're a methodical game. They just kind of, they're not ever in a rush. And Rodgers is so locked in right now that I think Tampa's going to have to force multiple turnovers to keep this game close. I don't know if you saw the clip of Aaron Rodgers smiling before he snapped the ball on one of those plays. Like, he knew exactly what was about to happen. They're so down there right now. Defensively, they're not great defensively, but what they do is they just do enough. The bend but don't break, right? They do enough to force enough stops to get Aaron Rodgers the ball so he can win the game for them. And that's all they need to do. And against Tampa, what they're going to have to do is this. I wrote for Fox Sports kind of my early keys to the game. One of them was, Tampa's number one in the NFL at stopping the run between the tackles. And the reason why that's important is when teams try to run the football and you shut them down, it gets to third and long, right? And third and long obviously is advantageous for the defense, for the pass rush, and especially in this game because the Packers have a backup left tackle. If you can get them isolated on 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, maybe there's some trouble. But when you run the football, as the Packers want to do, you stay ahead of the chains, you set up some play action, some movement, you mess with the defense, and then you come back and hit them with the same formation. You ran it the first time, now boom, it's a play action pass off that, big plays happen. So there's incentives for the Packers to kind of get the run game moving, even though they can definitely win if Aaron Rodgers had to throw the ball all game. I'm sure they don't want to do that. So Tampa's got to force turnovers, stop the run, and then hope Tom Brady can move the ball against, sometimes the Packers play pretty soft defense at times, especially at the end of the half. So I think it's tough for Tampa to go win this game.
Okay. I mean, thanks, but that didn't really make me feel any better. I want to unpack a little bit more of what's working for Aaron Rodgers. You sort of touched on a bit of this, but I saw 2 touchdowns this past weekend, that both of which were like, why doesn't that work every time? And I was texting with you about it and some of the other guys who help with the show, and I don't really have an answer yet. So here's what I want to know. Play action, he went away from it for a lot of his career, and now it's back, and Aaron Rodgers looks like he can do whatever the hell he wants when he uses play action. And then the one I really want to know about is the goal line touchdown to Davante Adams, where they send Adams in motion because it's man coverage, which means, yep, like, we have the best receiver in the game like running while a cornerback is like chasing him along the line. Jalen Ramsey, no schlub. And of course he's just like 4 steps ahead of the guy and gets a quick pass from Rodgers and he's in for the touchdown. So how come these 2 very obvious things are working and defensive coordinators can't seem to stop what I can see?
I mean, man coverage is easy to detect. And then I don't know how you would stop that play. I mean, if you switch, I guess you take the outside corner on number one, and as if Adam comes across, you can switch him on. But the inside guy then pretty much is free. I mean, the guy coming over can guard him, but that guy's running full speed. What if the other guy just runs right by him? I mean, like, it's just hard to defend. And offenses know that. But you also have to have a quarterback. If you watch that play, it was an RPO. Aaron Rodgers threw the ball very quickly. Most quarterbacks can't get the ball. I mean, he was almost, if you watch it, go back and watch it, guys, if you can. He was almost off balance because the back almost looked like he hit him as he threw the ball. That's how quickly the ball got out to Davante Adams. The play that no one can stop is what the Chiefs ended the game on with, yeah, Tyreek Hill, which is that little, the little sprint right option where he just kind of faked inside, boom, went to the flat, ball game's over. Dude, they're just, against man coverage, they're just really hard to defend. If you scheme them up right too, you can get the offense to pick guys or clear out guys. And so it's a really good play. But again, it's a play that you run to get a yard, right? Because, you know, it's a ball, and Rodgers threw the ball behind Adams. It wasn't the greatest pass.
Right.
Chad Henne threw a great pass to Tyreek Hill. So it's a yard or two. And then you have counters off that too. So, you know, the Packers, I'm sure, have a built-in counter this weekend off that look for Tampa Bay.
All right, and then the play action, which I don't know why he ever stopped using it. Maybe that's why Mike McCarthy isn't the coach there any longer, but it's back, and it doesn't seem stoppable to me.
Yeah, so I detailed this again last week. Between 2016 and 2019, I think the Packers, don't quote me the numbers, I got to find them again, ran play action pass. So that's McCarthy's final three seasons and Matt LaFleur's, no, McCarthy's final two and Matt LaFleur's first two, right? This is third season with the Packers. Play action pass was about 20%. That's it. Maybe less, 18%. And Rodgers just wasn't very comfortable doing it. They ran a lot from shotgun when he was with McCarthy. So the play action pass just tends to be better out of, you know, under center. It tends to be better when you run the football. I get it. The analytics say that's not true, but I think it is, okay? I think defenders will tell you that as well. And this year they're up to 30%. And play action pass is my favorite thing ever, because as offensive lineman, I get like a free block almost. I go run block my guy. He stops his feet, and then boom, the ball's gone by then. And we saw, you know, they beat little quarters look there, split the safeties, boom, touchdown. And the more they're doing that, the better they've been. And we've seen throughout the NFL, Tampa Bay as well. Tampa Bay's a lot more play action lately. They've been a lot better on offense.
Wait, go a little further with that. You love it as a lineman because you run block your guy.
Yeah, so the reason, okay, so here's the reason why I think it's important to run the ball as a lineman to be good at play action pass. So when you sell play action pass, especially the inside two guys, the guards, you have to sell it like a run, because the linebackers read through you to the quarterback. And if you go pretend like you're run blocking your guy, the linebackers step up because they read run through you to the quarterback. Even the safeties kind of read through you to the quarterback. And it's a tough block sometimes. You're one-on-one on an island, because in pass protection, you kind of all move as a unit, right? If you are on the front side of a play action pass, if I'm the guard, the tackle's on an island by himself. I'm on an island, there's no one helping you, right? You're just kind of in space by yourself. And if you run the ball well, or run the ball a little bit, then when you go sell the run, the defender thinks you're running the football. And so he stops his feet to play the run. You know, he looks around to find the run. And you have to be very confident to make that block. And if you do it right, you do it well, it sells the entire run. If you aren't confident in your run blocking and in that kind of footwork, you're going to pop straight up and sort of kind of passively block the guy, and the linebacker sees it right away and drops back into coverage. And then also, if you passively kind of creep out to your defender, then he could probably beat you around the corner, beat you inside. But if you, boom, sell run right away, they got to stop their feet, okay? And that block is easier made when you feel confident in your technique, which basically is run blocking, right? You run block for the first three steps of that block. So that's why, I know the analytics will say it doesn't matter that if you run the football or not, but I think a lot of it's just our offensive line technique, and you feel more comfortable in that technique if you've run the ball well that game.
Okay. Mission accomplished for this segment. I'm a lot smarter than I was before this began. We skipped over, we spent our time talking about Brady, Rodgers. I predicted a Super Bowl run for him after they drafted Jordan Love. That take has lived on well. Now let's talk about the third guy in that sort of triumvirate of all-time greats that we've been able to watch for 15 years. Drew Brees. We mentioned his clunker of a game. Everyone's assuming he's going to be retired. We know he'll give it a few days. But last game with New Orleans, maybe last game ever. Any thoughts on sort of, you know, seeing that sort of emotional moment of him and Tom Brady after the game with their kids, on Drew Brees' maybe, who knows, you know, potential future in the league? Is there anything left to say on Drew Brees other than great career, but see you later?
Did you have a little soft spot for Tom Brady there? Like, he looked like a real human, like not like a robot.
No. He looked like he was being cool to a guy who would be sort of able to sit at the same table as him at a wedding. When he's dealing with other lesser quarterbacks, he forgets who their names are. So I still think that's ridiculous. But
he does do that. He's retiring. I mean, he's done. You saw the Tampa defense. It's like, this guy can't throw the ball anymore. I mean, their most explosive play was Jameis Winston throwing a touchdown pass on a trick play. It's tough. I mean, look, I've said this before, that a lot of times your body goes before your brain does, right? Your brain wants to keep playing. Your brain thinks you can play, but your body just doesn't. It can't play anymore. I think Drew Brees is at that point. Jay Glazer reported before the game, this was his last game in the Superdome, which essentially means he will be in the booth for NBC next season. I have to feel there's a bit of a feeling they kind of underperformed since the last Super Bowl. This is the only Super Bowl they've won, right, in 2009. Since then, they've won a lot of games and not a lot of playoff games, right? Again, they have yet to win two playoff games in a single postseason since 2009. And it's not like they were in the divisional round all the time. They were in a wild card a bunch, and they lost in the divisional round. The last three games, they've been home favorites and lost, Gabe, at home. The last three losses, I should say. They've been home favorites and lost, right? Rams, Vikings, and now the Bucks. It feels like that opportunity to get more just didn't. If you look at other aging quarterbacks, even like an Aaron Rodgers, he kind of seems to still be going up, and the Packers are back in the NFC Championship game again with a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And I just feel like, not an indictment on really anybody, maybe the whole organization, Brees and Peyton, everyone, they should have done more, but they didn't.
Well, they had to take their shot. So then we see a moment and sort of everyone assumes that this means Jameis, not your boy Taysom. Jameis now will take over next year. And if they can get the roster right, they got some cap issues. But if they can get the roster right, they're a competitor again. And some might think even better with Jameis. I'm not so sure about that. I have another theory on who could end up in New Orleans. But do you think Jameis can make them a better team?
They're going to have a lot of moving pieces to get. I mean, they're like 100 million over the cap, dude.
Yeah.
They have a lot of work to do. This is it. This is like, I think it's time for like a little mini rebuild. It was kind of all or nothing this year.
Okay.
They're going to have to find some ways to keep guys, but it's going to be really tough. They're not going to be the same team next year. They won't be as talented. Maybe Winston's that guy to hold you over for 1 year till you get to someone else. Taysom Hill's not your regular quarterback. So is it Jameis? With the cost of what it will be, you probably will have to roll with someone like Jameis or Andy Dalton, right? Like maybe a mid-range backup type salary contract. You can't pay a quarterback. And maybe you go up and you love Trey Lance or Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, and you trade the farm for that guy, possibly. But the way they're sitting now, it's almost mini rebuild time. It's like time to kind of, take 2 or 3 years to build that roster back up.
Okay. Well, let's shift away from the NFC, because if we go back to any of the matchup in the championship game, I'm going to lose my mind talking Tom Brady, and there'll be more chances later this week for you to do that. So let's switch over to the AFC, where I think you got some stuff to worry about. It is going to be a sweaty-ass week for Chiefs fans. Obviously, they pull out the win barely over Baker and the Browns. But, the Mahomes concussion is serious. He's in the protocol all week. You're going to be sweating, I think, till about Saturday before we really know his status. Then you're going to sweat all game long against this Bills team that really, truly has emerged as the only team that we think can compete with them. They held the friggin' Ravens to 3. Now they got a defense. They always had an offense. Now they got a defense. Admit it, Jeff, more than ever before, and you started admitting it a little bit recently. You are scared of the Bills.
Yes. And generally speaking, I mean, yeah, Chiefs are 3-point favorites only for a reason. But real quickly, so Pat Mahomes is in the concussion protocol as of Monday, and it's admitted. He's going through it. It's a 5-day protocol. And he should play, right? Obviously, he bounced back up after that. He ran off the field. Andy Reid said he passed his test. There's no incentive for the Chiefs to be, like, truthful, I guess, is maybe the wrong word to use. Like, they can say whatever they want. He's in the protocol. He has to be cleared by a third party. They could say he's the sharpest ever been in his life. And then behind the scenes, the third party is like, he can't play, right? I mean, it doesn't matter what the Chiefs say. There's just some weird arguments going around that it was a nerve pain in his neck, some nerve thing. Guys, I've been in this league. I was in this league for 8 years. I've watched a lot of football. I'm sure I can't say never. And Gabe, you've watched a lot of football too. How many guys have been in the concussion protocol with nerve pain in their neck?
I never heard of that.
Yeah, so the idea that he hurt his nerve and that made him woozy after the play, and therefore he's actually not concussed, he's not in the protocol, but guys, he is in the protocol. So it doesn't matter what you think happened. The Chiefs are telling you what happened. He's in the protocol for a reason. He's got a concussion. A concussion can be all of 1 second. It doesn't matter how long it lasts. You could pop back up. You were concussed. That's what happened. He got whiplash. That's what happened, guys. The idea that he was choked out, my radio host, his name is Sean O'Connell. He was a UFC fighter. He was in the PFL as well. He won $1 million fighting the PFL a couple years ago. I texted him, like, Sean, did Pat get choked out? He goes, absolutely not. Of course he didn't get choked out. This is the silliest thing I've ever seen. Guys, use your eyes. He didn't get choked out. He didn't get his... Have you ever been choked out before, Gabe? I have. Have you been?
No.
Okay. What? It doesn't just happen in a split second. The arm's got to be all around your neck, and you have to be like in the right position. He got whiplash, guys. He got whiplash, caused his brain to bounce around, got concussed. It's football. It happens. It wasn't dirty. It wasn't malicious. It happens. I think he'll play Sunday. The line reflects that he'll play Sunday. He's got his toe he's dealing with as well. I'm assuming he's going to play this weekend. So here's where I stand in this game. So are the Chiefs. I still did not see that kind of killer instinct to stomp on someone's throat that I wanted to see. And I'll tell you the exact moment it was, okay? Well, obviously, Pat Mahomes was hurt at the end of the game. I'm not talking about that, even though Chad Henley did a great job. They're up 19-3. And look, to be fair, they got lucky, right? The Browns fumbled the ball at the back of the end zone. Chiefs go down, score 3 points. Could have easily been 16-10. Browns get the ball at that. It's not. 19-3. So you got some breaks, Chiefs. You pick off Baker Mayfield, the first drive of the second half. You start the ball inside the 20. Guess what you have to do? You have to score a touchdown and you end the game, right? It's 26-3. Game is over. It's done at that point. Okay. You're not losing a 23-point lead at home in the playoffs. Guess what happens? 3 and out, miss a field goal. Like, I've had this problems all year, guys. Against Buffalo, you can't do that. If you get the ball in the red zone, you got to score a touchdown. And obviously at the end, incredible job by Chad Henne. And I love the play call by Andy Reid. The best thing that Pat Mahomes, in my opinion, did for Andy Reid outside of winning the Super Bowl was he made Reid an aggressive coach. Right? That's not what Andy Reid used to be. I played with him in 2013. My brother's been there for a while. Andy Reid was never like this. Backup quarterback, ball at the 48. He runs a sprint out. Now, Tyreek Hill ran a great route. His man coverage is a great look. One thing I want to say, Tony Romo said he was in just believe they ran a play. They were always running the play. I don't understand this idea that they weren't running the play. There was nothing. Chad Henne did not audible. He didn't change anything. That was the called play. They were always running the play. The reason why it was weird was because they reviewed the play, right? And so the play before, because Chad Henne made the spot. The Chiefs broke the huddle way too soon with the running clock. They broke the huddle about 32 seconds left. So got up to the line of scrimmage, and Chad Henne goes, hey, guys. He told the offense, hey, guys, we got to wait for the clock. You can listen to the TV copy. He says that. Like, hey, guys, wait for the clock. So the offensive line relaxed for a second, got back in their stance, they motioned the running back in. It's man coverage, boom, play is on. If it's zone coverage, I don't know if they run the play. Man coverage, boom, the play is on. The right tackle signals to the running back because they have a little work. They got to work on their block on that side. Boom, play is run. It was always going to be run. So the idea that this was like some deep fake the Chiefs practiced, no, they were running this play. So I give them credit for that. Let's talk about Buffalo. They're kind of in survive and advance mode. I know Buffalo fans aren't going to want to hear this, but your red zone defense has kind of been a little bit lucky. In the first two playoff games, the opponents have had 8 red zone trips. You've only had 2 touchdowns. You've had a fourth down play that was not converted, another fourth down play that wasn't converted. I think multiple missed field goals and a pick six. Like, you kind of have lived on the edge defensively right now. Your offense has not played all that well. And defensively, you're kind of living on the edge. So if you're a Chiefs fan, you got to feel good, right? Because that regression is going to come. The Bills are not going to be 25% on red zone defense. That regression is going to come. So the question I have for this game, it comes down to the Bills' offense. The Chiefs thought they're going to score if Mahomes is in the game. Can the Bills' offense kind of get back to what they were in the regular season? Because they haven't been. And then the red zone, on the flip side, the Chiefs have the 32nd ranked red zone defense. So can the Bills, they're going to move the ball far from 20 to 20. Inside the 20, can they keep up their red zone defense? Can they score points against the Chiefs? Because if either side holds each other to a field goal in 2 or 3 times, the other team's going to win. So that's my key right now. I haven't dived deep in the game, but the Bills can certainly win, Gabe. Hopefully that wasn't rambling too much there.
No, you gave me a lot to work with there. So here's what I want to know. Obviously, the talk all week long is only going to be about Pat and his health and some of those conspiracy theories or wacky ideas that you addressed at the top. But I'm concerned or confused, I guess, about the Bills' offense and the fact that they, I think they ran it like 12 straight times on one touchdown drive. They ran it 24 of 25 times at one stretch in the first half. Like they basically, or excuse me, threw it. What did I just say? Ran it? So basically the opposite of everything I just said. All they did was throw over and over and over and over again against a team with notably great cornerbacks. And yet Josh Allen, who we've wondered about accuracy in the past, just throwing, 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 throwing. How's that work against the Chiefs?
I think you just have to score as many points as possible. Whatever way you have to do that is the way you do it. And whether if it's running the football, it's great. If it's passing the football, it's great. Now, we saw the Bills obviously pass the ball a ton to open up, ran the ball better in the second half, kind of helped their offense a little bit stabilize. The thing about what everyone says, run the football against Kansas City, that's how you beat them. If you finish a drive with 7 points, that's how you beat them. If you run the football and don't score touchdowns, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The goal is whatever the Bills have to do to score touchdowns is what they have to do. If it's run the football, sure. If it's passing the football, great. If it's a combination of both, be my guest. But that's what they have to do to beat the Chiefs. I know it's easy to say, just score more points. That is the exact answer. I know that's a very John Madden thing to do, right? But if you're playing the Jets, the key of the game is like not score more points, right? Against Kansas City, you have to score every single drive, nonstop, all the time to beat them. And so if it's running the football, great. If it's passing the ball, great. I'm worried about the Chiefs linebackers and coverage against the Buffalo. They're going to find some ways to get them in space. But look, the Bills offense has not been what they were in the regular season, the first 2 weeks of the playoffs. We'll see if they are this weekend.
All right, let's talk about the losers a little bit because they were two teams that you've talked about a lot over the last couple of years. And I think the Browns were as unlucky as you can get. But the Ravens lose, and then, you know, all the excuses start coming and talking about, well, next year, next year, next year. Here's a take that I saw that I thought was perfectly stated, and I want to bounce off you. This is from Mike Tannier. He says, the problem with Lamar Jackson and the Ravens is that they do things differently. Other teams and quarterbacks can lose playoff games or not reach the playoffs for years running conventional stuff without it being a referendum on anyone's worthiness, right? So there's plenty of guys who just good enough to get there, and then it's like, it didn't work. They played a bad game. And we don't question like the whole philosophy of what they do. But with Lamar, whenever he loses, it's like, well, see, that's proof that the way he does it is wrong. Why do you think that is?
All right, so the reason why is because they're so freaking good in the regular season, and then the playoffs, are they even 50% of what they are in the regular season? I mean, they're averaging 30 points a game.
They're trash in the playoffs.
What? And they scored 20 against a bad Tennessee Titans defense. And three, I mean, obviously, you know, Lamar got knocked out of the game. But you threw that terrible interception, man. Like, if you score a touchdown there, it's 10-10. The game is a whole different game. So it's not that they do things differently. And that is a little part of it, right? That they run a different offense. The problem is that it works great in the regular season against the Bengals. But when you're playing a playoff team in the playoffs, it doesn't work. That's the problem. It's not, again, listen to me carefully. It's not that it's unique. It's that you suck in the playoffs. That's why. And the uniqueness of the offense contributes to why you suck in the playoffs. So hear me out on this, Gabe. People say, why can't they have a more complex passing game? Because that's a huge problem. They do not. They do not have a complex passing game. And the reason is you don't have time to practice everything. So in practice, you only have a certain number of reps to have. If you have that run game they have, they have to spend a lot of time practicing that run game. It takes the reps away from passing the ball and working on your passing game, which also needs a lot of work. I talked to a lineman who was playing this past weekend about practice. Remember we talked about practice last week? I asked him about it.
Yeah.
And he said, guess how many times you run the football in 50 scripted plays in practice? If you take a guess, Gabe, how many times do they run the football? 50.
I don't know where you're trying to lead me, but I would have said 25. Just split it up.
No, 8 to 10 times. That's it. So like teams practice the pass game most of practice. That's what they do. Because most of the time, by this time of the year, the run game is the run game. You're running zone, you're running power. Like there's not much to practice. You either know how to do it or you don't. But the way Baltimore has their run game, you kind of got to practice it, right? You got moving parts, you got motions, you got reads, you got pulling guys, you're reading this guy, you're reading that guy. So it takes, you have to practice it more. So you don't have time to practice the passing game. They have got to invest in number one wide receiver, whether that's Allen Robinson, like a big guy. Go get a third and six, go get the ball for Lamar Jackson, okay? And they got to invest in a passing game coordinator, whatever that is. If it's Greg, it's not going to be Greg Roman, someone else. They have to thread the line between this offense they're running now and, you know, Peyton Manning's passing offense, like somewhere in the middle, right? Hard to do. That's the concern with Baltimore. It's, again, it's not that their scheme is different. It's that they look vastly different in the playoffs.
Okay. Well, I mean, that was beautifully summed up for me, and I didn't ever think about it in terms of practice time. But yeah, if to be the best running team maybe ever the last couple of seasons, it's only logical that you'd have to spend time working on that and perfecting that. And every time you spend a few minutes with that in practice, you're not working on the passing game. I mean, that just makes so much sense. I don't know how anyone would debate it. We'll get to Lamar, Baker, some of the other losers, and what their future holds when we do Moving the Line. But bottom line, you're going to kind of reserve judgment on what we should expect from the Chiefs until we kind of know how Pat will play. But you say he's going to play and they should be the favorite. I think it's just going to be close.
I think he's going to play. Real quick, I want to wrap up the Browns real quick because we didn't talk about them. And just specifically a couple things. So we saw the play, the helmet-to-helmet, ball's falling at the back of the end zone. I'm not debating whether or not what the rule should be for that play. I don't know. I feel like the defense gets shit on all the time. They have one thing that benefits them. Fuck it. Like, don't fumble the football. Obviously, it was helmet-to-helmet. I hate the targeting rule. So I wouldn't have called it. I don't like that rule. I think it takes out any nuance whatsoever. And then, like, two plays later, Kareem Hunt just lowered his head and hit Tyrann Mathieu in the head. Like, it's what the game ends, guys. The spirit of the rule was not for that, okay? I know it looked ugly, looked bad. I get all that. Player safety, I get it. And even, I think, Terry McCauley, former referee, said on Twitter, like, no one's going to see that in real time.
Right.
Only on slow motion are we going to see that. So the Browns fumble over the back end. I saw Stefanski get Peter King a quote basically saying, like, and I've said this for a while now, Gabe, we have to do our job. We tell our guys not to extend the ball out unless it's fourth down or third down. And it was first down. Shouldn't have done it. I loved that answer because guess what? All you can control is what you can control, which is we coached you, unless it's third or fourth down, to not put the ball over the goal line, to not spread your arms out, because that's the reason why. He didn't listen. He did his own thing. He fumbled at the back of the end zone. All you can control is what you can control. If he didn't do that, Gabe, the ball's at the 1 yard line, Browns probably score. It's a different ball game. So I love the answer from Stefanski. That's how you know you got a good coach, guys. He's a really good coach.
Okay. Well, so then I was going to bring this up in Moving the Line, but let's go here now. You're talking about, obviously, you know, the touchback rule on the fumble through the end zone. I heard an interesting idea from Bill Barnwell, who I think credited a fan of his, who said, what if instead of it being a turnover where, you know, the defensive team takes over at their own 20 and it's basically like they were never in the red zone in the first place, to you're penalized by having the ball moved back to the 20 at whatever the next down is. So it's basically like good for you, way to get almost across the goal line, but then you fumbled it through the end zone. So now the next play starts from the 20. Good luck scoring from there. Decent idea? Because then it incentivizes, you still want to make the play, but what to your what, point, what you're not right doing something idiotic without risk.
I don't know what the right idea is because we treat the goal line different than any other part of the field, right? So if an offensive player makes the mistake of putting the ball out there, it's kind of on them.
Okay. I just think it's because we treat it differently than any other yard marker on the field. If all you have to do is like hover it over a section, there has to be a risk to the reward that you get there. The risk would be you lose the ball entirely and it goes to, you know, the other end of the field. But what if that risk was a little bit less? So you keep it, you know,
at I don't know. I kind of like there being like a poison pill for the offense.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
All right. Well, let's move along to the other story going on in the NFL that probably will heat up all week now that the games have been played. But it was bubbling all weekend long on Twitter, which is Deshaun Watson, who is apparently likely done in Houston. Big air quotes there. Listen, I'm going to go a counter to how we normally are on this show. We're usually pro-player, go get what you can get, guys. I have a slightly different feeling here. I'm probably pro-fan on this one. It seems kind of ridiculous to me that Deshaun is seemingly running the play that so many stars in both NBA and NFL run these days, which is make it very well known how unhappy you are, to the point where the organization has basically no choice but to trade you, because you make it clear you're not going to perform there. Then they trade you, and you're supposed to get a great path to a ring in your new team. That's worked for a few guys, and we'll talk about them in a second, but it seems like what Deshaun is doing now, I get it, Houston is a mess, and Deshaun seems like a good guy, but let's just call it what it is. This is a trend that is kind of crappy for fans, period.
It is crappy for fans. I get it. But it's also crappy to have a quarterback like Deshaun Watson and just find every way to alienate him, trade all away his best players, and not even listen to him. Look, you know how easy it would have been, Gabe, to be like, you know what, Deshaun? We'll interview Eric Bieniemy for you. We'll do it. It's over Zoom. Interview the freaking guy. Like, how hard is that to appease your star player? It's not that hard, Gabe. But they just continually do things, it feels like, to piss him off. And we don't have a lot of power in the NFL. We have, like, none as players, right? It's like the one we have is just kind of be angry and get traded. I don't know. I think they're wasting his talent. I don't think he goes anywhere. Depends who they hire, obviously. But simple things like that, like just not interviewing the guy he asked to be interviewed, which really is no sweat off their back to just do it. I see why he's upset.
I see why he's upset, too. And let's just say the Texans organization seems like it's terribly run. And he probably has not been shown the right kind of respect. And when former players are speaking up as often as they are, I have to imagine they're all onto something. But still, this keeps on happening. Like, Le'Veon Bell pulled a similar move. I'm assuming he's gone. So Le'Veon Bell, similar. Jalen Ramsey, similar. Jamal Adams, similar. In Houston, in another sport, James Harden. I mean, like, it's just guys realize, this isn't where I'm going to win.
That'd be so different.
How's it so different? It seems like guys are like, I can't win a ring here, so it's not worth being here.
I mean, that's kind of what it is sometimes, right? Like, once guys get paid, they want to win rings. Now, James Harden's a little different situation, but the NBA players it's the players, like, they have a lot more power. The NFL, this is like never happens. I mean, how often are players actually legit, like Deshaun Watson, demanding a trade? A star quarterback who's 25 years old in his fourth year demanding a trade? And how does this happen? Well, like, never.
No, but that's why we're at the beginning of something. And it
I don't think we are.
So let's say the Bills play a couple, they have seasons like this for a couple years, and then they have a down year, and then, a few things behind the scenes don't go the way Josh Allen wants. Can he just demand that he go be traded to a contender because they're treating him poorly? Like, what's the definition? I want to sympathize with Deshaun, who seems like he deserves the benefit of the doubt versus ownership and management.
But we often see that teams go out of their way to accommodate young players. Houston's like then the opposite, right? Remember, they traded away Dwayne Brown. Now, they traded for Tunsil. I get that. Traded away DeAndre Hopkins. They don't even listen to their quarterback. They told him, hey, you can have input on who we hire, and then did not give him any input. Again, okay, if you said to me, all right, or we were doing something together, and you were going to make a decision no matter what I said, but I had concerns about, hey, can you, like, keep me informed? You would just do it out of a courtesy because you're a good person, and you know how the business is run. You just be like, okay, I'll just email Schwartz. I'll just keep him on CCM. He's kind of in the loop. But in the end, I'll make him feel like he's wanted, but I'm going to do what I want to do. Same as wedding planning, right? Okay? You're married as well as I am. I remember after the wedding, my wife said, wow, you were great at helping pick everything out. You were just great. I said, we did everything you wanted to do. I just made it seem like I helped.
Yeah.
It was your flowers, your music, your food, your cake, your decor, your playlist. Everything was yours. And she's like, oh yeah, it was. I'm like, yeah, all I did was pretend that I was helping you. And I was, but like, we did everything you wanted to do. That's kind of all the Texans had to do, right? Was be like, all right, Deshaun, we'll massage your ego a little bit, but then we're going to do what we want to do. Like, it's so easy just to help them out. And they didn't do it. That's the problem I see, Gabe, is that they could have done this so simply to just help Deshaun out. and just play nice and couldn't do it.
I get it. And they suck at the management piece. And Bill O'Brien did a bad Belichick impersonation for years, and that's part of why they're in this situation. But he did also just sign a big contract for a lot of money saying he wanted to be the quarterback of this organization. Like, I keep on saying this. I want to be on his side. And I believe that he's probably the better person involved than, you know, the bad people in the front office there. But, man, it seems crummy. It just seems like guys have this feeling now that unless you are pretty much walking your way to the finals in your sport, it's a pointless team to be on. And this is what we're seeing. I'm going to compare the AFC now to sort of the Western Conference and the NBA in the last decade or so. It's like, listen, unless you're the Warriors until the Lakers come along, like, it doesn't matter. Like, just don't be in this conference. It's not going to matter if you're the third or fourth best team. That's starting to be what it feels like in the AFC, and it's just guys don't want to be there.
I think this is a very specific situation, like I mentioned. Like, even, like, Carson Wentz wanted out of Philly. It seemed like he wanted out. He didn't go public with it. It seemed like he wanted out. And Philly just fired the coach and kept him instead. Like, so this is more than just firing Bill. Like, there's something deeply wrong about the organization. Did you read the article that was written last week about Jack Easterby, the guy who's, I think that's his name, who's running the organization? Like, almost no football background experience. His attitude a little bit. I don't know if I'd want my team run by someone like
Listen, from everything I've ever read and heard, the Texans aren't loaded up on good guys in their front office. I don't want to start slandering people, but like, I believe that Deshaun has a reason to be upset with these people. I just think it's strange. And I'll end this segment by saying this. There's a very good chance that Le'Veon Bell or Antonio Brown is going to end up in the Super Bowl this year. Okay, two guys who famously just sort of like made it impossible to keep them on not one team, but two. And now they're role players on potential championship teams because they just sort of made themselves too hard to have on the team. And I think that's a weird precedent to be setting. And I'm not comparing Deshaun Watson's character to theirs, but wow.
But I don't think in the end, Deshaun Watson will be that, like, will be that way. Like, being traded to the Dolphins or the Jets doesn't signify you're going to win a championship. I mean, it just gets you out of one bad situation to hopefully a better situation. And the Texans, again, James Harden sabotaged the start of the season, right? Like, he was throwing passes that were in the middle of nowhere, wasn't playing hard. Deshaun Watson didn't sabotage anything this year, right? Yep. Play his ass off. So that's why the NFL and like in basketball are different. If they don't trade Deshaun Watson, he's pissed next year. He'll still come to work.
Yep.
And he'll still play his ass off.
He will, because he's like a good guy.
I don't think he gets traded in the end, actually.
Well, okay. It's interesting because you're kind of on an island with that one. It seems like everyone else has leapt to the part where he's just gone. I was thinking maybe he'd end up in New Orleans because they'll need a quarterback and they've got a million great pieces, but it seems like for cap reasons, that's probably very unlikely. I think he should get himself to the NFC if he wants out of Houston. I think that's the only chance he has to win rings in the future, if that's what this is about, is being on a better franchise. There's no winning in the AFC. The NFC is about to sort of die. Like, we're seeing Breeze retire. Brady can't go much longer. Rodgers only has 2 or 3 years left. That's where he's got to be, in the NFC.
Well, so NFC would be like who? Niners?
Yeah. Niners are the team that I've heard people say that kind of.
Yeah, but they might not have like the Jets or Dolphins have the pack. I mean, you wouldn't take them in New York?
Oh, I'd love to have them in New York. Absolutely. Now we got a good coach, put a quarterback like him on that team. I think they get there pretty soon. But I don't know if that's what he wants. And they're not, let's not call the Jets some like perfectly run organization.
No, but I think Joe Douglas is good and Saleh should be good too, I think.
All right. Well, I just thought, listen, I wish Deshaun Watson the best. I think he's a fabulous player, and he seems like a good guy. I think there's a lot of goodwill for him. There were people talking about having a march in his honor. He tweeted, guys, please don't do that. COVID, don't get together on my behalf. I'm humbled, but that's not the right move. I think his heart's in the right place. I just think that agents and the people whispering in superstar players' ears these days are giving them the notion that If you don't like it here, make yourself a pain in the ass and you get traded to a contender. It just seems like a strange slippery slope. That's all.
But I'm telling you, like, this doesn't happen very often though with NFL players. A lot of us don't. A lot of us don't have the leverage to do so either.
We know he's a good friend of Jalen Ramsey's, and we know Jalen Ramsey did this to perfection.
Yeah, it's easier cornerback than quarterback.
Yeah, and it didn't work out for Jalen. So let's leave it there. Let's move the line. Our little betting segment. I want to talk about some other salty people with a few over under bets. We'll be back in a second. All right, Jeff, welcome back. Time for moving the line, a little over-under game. I want to know, chances Bill Belichick cried a little bit on Sunday night. 1% chance Belichick cried.
I will say that over. He might have had a quiet moment of reflection where he was upset about letting Brady go.
You think there was some self-awareness yes. That Bill
even
Belichick though, realized he
went,
what he left
even though he went 7-9 with that really shitty roster. Like, it's not like Belichick had... I mean, how many coaches with that team go 7-9?
Probably not many.
Even though it's his roster. That's the problem.
I mean, it was the roster he built, but his quarterback did get COVID like early in the season. I think Bill Belichick never really looks in the rear view or in the mirror for that matter. So I doubt that he cried, but a lot of people were making that joke. And Brady certainly seems like he's getting the last laugh. I want to know any chance though, sub question to this, any chance, even though you said earlier in the show you think Breeze is really done, do you think maybe he ices those ribs? Maybe he spends a little time with his family?
I think he's done.
You don't think there's any chance he comes back and pulls Brady?
I bet he's in the booth like doing Super Bowl coverage for NBC. Even though they don't have the Super Bowl, I don't think. But like whatever their pregame is or whatever their like Super Bowl coverage is, I bet he's doing it.
Okay. I guess he got the image took a big hit just before the season this year, and then I think he did repair it with some some smart fixes there, and hopefully learned some things. All right, so you think that's really, really it for Drew Brees? No Tom Brady lessons from him?
I agree, yeah.
Okay. I saw an interesting tweet from Marlon Humphrey of the Ravens, who said, everybody different, but I would rather root for the team I lost to. I would rather root for the team I lost to win it all. So he's saying basically, Bills beat us, now I want them to win it all. Over under 50% players would agree with that.
If it's not your rival, yes, they'd agree with it.
Really? So you get beat, you say that's the better team. Now I want them
you want to say, hey man, we at least lost like we lost the champs. We know we have to. This is the bar to clear next year.
Yeah.
But if the Bills go lose to the Chiefs, it's like shit. Now we got to beat the Bills. Now we got to beat the Chiefs.
Right.
Now we got to beat the Packers. Like so, it kind of if you lose to the eventual Super Bowl champions, okay, we're close. But then if you lose, it's four teams down. It's like, it's not, the loss stings a lot more.
Yeah, it's like if you get cheated on and then, your girlfriend ends up marrying the other guy, you're like, all right, well, that worked out. But if she cheats on you and then, dates a million other guys and it proved it never mattered, that stings a little bit more.
Right, exactly.
Okay. All right, MVP voting next season for these younger guys. We've hit on all three. Over, under... 1.5 in the voting for Josh Allen. Is he going to be the number one guy or later?
I will say later.
You think so? Because the momentum, I said it before this season, Jeff. I told you he was going to get a lot of love.
How often are the MVP winners, like they're not even the favorites normally, right? Like Matt Ryan, I mean, was Aaron Rodgers a favorite this year? Not Matt Ryan. Aaron Rodgers a favorite this year?
I wouldn't think so, but he had to be. One of the people talked about. I mean,
yeah, I would still say he's not. So basically, this MVP, I would say he's not the MVP, even though their coordinator coming back, Brian Daboll, is a huge win for the Bills. It appears he's coming back next year.
Yeah, because we would have guessed he was going to have a lot of options this offseason, and his jobs fill up, and he doesn't have one of them. I'm surprised. All right, so Josh Allen will be in the hunt, but you don't think he'll be next year's MVP. Lamar Jackson, over under 3.5. Is he going to be a top three guy in the MVP race next year?
No.
We covered him. We'll save some time. Now a controversial one. Baker Mayfield, 5.5. Is he sort of a top five type guy for MVP talk next year? Seem to figure it out at the end of the year.
No.
Really don't think so. They could improve that win total, couldn't they?
I mean, you're going to have Mahomes, Allen, Wilson, Rodgers, Derrick Henry. I mean, you're going to have all these guys ahead of Baker Mayfield. I think what we saw from Baker Mayfield is probably like what that's probably, 250 yards a game. They run the football. That's not going to win the MVP.
Okay. More likely to win an MVP or a Super Bowl one day?
Oh, jeez. I mean, if he wins the MVP, they might win the Super Bowl. So I would say that I would say MVP, I guess.
No, see, I'm going to go the other way. I think Baker, it would take a lot for either to happen. I think he could win a Super Bowl. You know, defense gets a little bit better. He's got a good coach. He does what he needs to do on offense. They could win a Super Bowl, you know, with the league shifts a little bit. Winning an MVP, you need the stats that doesn't look like he's ever going to have in a winning team. So we'll pass on that. All right. The NFL announced there will be major changes to the combine this offseason. They're going to be regional medical checks, more formalized pro days, Zoom interviews, just basically a lot of fixes with COVID still, unfortunately, still in mind, even this spring. So I want to know over under 30% chance this ever returns to what we would have called normal, the sort of setup you were used to.
Oh, I think it's normal as soon as they can make it normal.
Really?
I mean, this is, the medical part of this is so important. It's why the combine was created. You have rooms and rooms and rooms of team doctors. And you spend an entire day, they go over all your body, give you scans, they do all the blood work and workups. And like, that's why this is created. The workout part is not as important as in the meetings with the teams. And I think, you know, look, the NFL people, they like to socialize, right? They meet their buddies, they hang out at the bars at night. Like, that's a big part of the scene of this whole thing. I think it comes back as soon as possible.
Okay. And you've always liked the extra exhibition for, you know, non-Power 5 players or, you know, guys who didn't get as much attention on a national level from the Power 5 schools. It's great.
They're going to do regional pro days, I think, this year too. So there's other ways for them to get seen this year. But yeah, it's tough when, you know, you can't kind of all be there in person.
Yeah. Well, also our producer Nick points out probably beyond anything else you just said, I think the number one reason is it's good programming for NFL Network in the offseason. Oh, yeah. It fills up a lot of damn hours for a lot of shows. So I know they'd like to have a place where they can point the cameras and talk about guys running. So they'll get back to it as soon as they can. We'll end with some offseason rule change possibilities. We sort of touched on this one earlier. Chances the NFL fixes the end zone fumble touchback rule this offseason over under 50%, since that was a big moment to see it go wrong.
I will say no, because there's no great fix to it. That's the problem.
Okay. I proposed one earlier, courtesy of Bill Barnwell.
I don't like it.
You don't like it? Well, fight with Bill Barnwell and his fans then. All right. How about this one? And
I wrote a whole article on this, by the way. I could find it for SB Nation. Like, I wrote a whole thing about it. Like, I think there's just no, and I think I put down like what we talked, what you said. Like, I think there's no great option, in my opinion.
Okay. I'm going to bring up something our buddy Trey Wingo tweeted and get it to a rule change. So he said on Sunday night, Mahomes won't finish the game. Lamar Jackson didn't finish the game on Saturday. Commissioners in attendance, don't be surprised if come this offseason there'll be major attempts to protect quarterbacks next season. So we've added some rules in the past few years. Chances the NFL adds even more rules to protect quarterbacks.
You know what they should do, though? I have a good idea. Is that they just put a flag around them. And when someone gets close, they just pull the flag. And you're down. You're down right at the spot. No, it's not. I mean, the Mahomes injury, the Lamar injury, they're not dirty plays. It's football, man. It happens.
So you don't think that there was some fear in the commissioner's office that...
Of course there's fear that your star quarterbacks get hurt. But what are they going to do differently on the Mahomes thing? Hey, like, just don't tackle him hard, please?
Yeah. It almost looked like, what is it, Mac Wilson, was it? It almost looked like his hand was going to get torn off just because of the awkwardness of where he was.
And I know it's hard to say because my sibling plays as well. But man, like, parents on Twitter sometimes, like, Mahomes' mom called him out, said it was a dirty hit. It wasn't dirty, man. Like, come on.
Yeah. I think, generally speaking, families of professional athletes, unless they are media personalities and known figures themselves, are never doing their family any favors sharing their thoughts. Because, as you've mentioned, people then just assume, oh, but he's sort of speaking for his brother or for his, you know, her son. And that's not the case. You're just popping off. And then it's applied to your, you know, your son and their work environment. It's not fair.
Yeah. I'm very My parents are very passionate about us. I'm glad they don't have social media either to tweet.
If your dad's anything like my dad, there was never a possibility that he was going to figure that one out. So big weekend ahead. Any closing thoughts on championship weekend and the Chiefs or anything else that sticks out that we didn't cover?
No, it was a great weekend. Only three games left. And I'm excited to kind of break everything down, like the matchups down further on Wednesday's show, Thursday's show, I should say. We'll have a lot of props. We'll have a lot of fun with it. We're going to make it a good time. So otherwise, man, have a great couple of days. Everyone, appreciate everyone listening. Numbers going up. Please rate, review, subscribe. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys on Thursday. Take care.